This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Live younger, look younger, feel younger at GCNLife.com.
We have to build the wall. It will get built. We're going to complete it. A lot of progress has been made. Watch what happens.
There is chaos now in this administration. This week was one of the most chaotic weeks we've ever seen in American government. And amazingly, they want to close the week, President Trump does, by shutting down the government. Shutting down the government.
That was Senator Chuck Schumer. Before that, the president, obviously, there is a little bit of chaos over the president rejecting the shutdown bill and saying, yeah, I want the border wall. So where do we stand? Will we see this show close, at least in the next couple of days? We will certainly know heading into the weekend. Kate Delaney, hope you're enjoying your holidays if you've already started them. Or perhaps you're just chillaxing and pushing through the time until next week, and we're happy to have you along either way. A couple of quick things for you, and we'll get into those as we move along because I've gotten so much mail. In fact, we'll save it. We'll go to the mailbag next. We'll dive into the mailbag. I will tell you, no movie reviews, because the movie that we're seeing is the real-life movie that's playing out in D.C. So first off, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis is retiring. This is one day after the president said he would pull troops out of Syria, and it's a move that Mattis advised against, so he was going to go. The fact that it happened so quickly, I think, caught a lot of us off guard, although it would have to be quick, wouldn't it? Because he is the defense secretary, he's not informed of it, there's just some discussion about it, and then poof, it's done. And that's posturing on his part, and he realizes, yeah, we don't agree on a lot here, so he needs somebody that agrees with his policies. Speaking of not agreeing, remember that little conversation that the press was invited to in the Oval with Nancy Pelosi representing the House and Chuck Schumer representing the Senate, who you just heard there, and they went round and round about the wall. He, the president, wanted $5 billion. He was not getting $5 billion from them. So it looked like, though, that the president was going to find other pockets to go into to get that $5 billion, which I believe he could. You know, it would take some wrangling, but it's, let's say there's ways to do that. I'll leave it at that. And then, all of a sudden, Paul Ryan goes into the White House, comes out and says, yeah, this isn't happening. That the president refused to sign a Senate-backed bill because he wanted more money for the border wall. So the short-term spending bill pretty much punts a decision over the border wall funding until next year when you have the new House, which would be democratically controlled. They're not going to see that through, no way. Funding to keep a lot of agencies and departments open is going to lapse at midnight on Friday unless Congress and the White House reach a deal. So if a shutdown happens, you've got law enforcement training, federally assisted loans, those kinds of things, parks, national parks, there would be no park employees that they would be off, furloughed, whatever you want to call it. So, and then 420,000 federal employees, and that would include Border Patrol agents, so there would have to be a discussion on that too. So that bill to avert the government shutdown is in limbo, as they say. And this is one where, you know, listen, he was saying that this is what I want, this is what's going to happen. When he was running, that was one of the major points he made consistently. I'm going to build a wall. Mexico is going to pay for it. Remember, that was the other thing. Mexico is going to pay for it. I'm building a wall, period. That's what's going to happen. So the Democrats thought that it was in the bag, and then it turns out it wasn't in the bag. And there was a lot of conversation about vetoing it and heading off for the holidays, and that's it. So this is exactly what we might see here. Ho, ho, ho. The people that we pay to represent us, because remember, it's we the people, never forget that. The people we pay to represent us may be staying in D.C. a little longer than they had planned. I don't know that this is a real power play. I don't know that this can be easily solved. This is kind of a tailspin now. And because of that, though, we certainly saw the markets bounce low. When there's any kind of news or heavy drama, and this would be drama because first you have the quick announcement about withdrawing U.S. troops from Syria, and then you have I'm not signing this short-term bill, so forget about February 8th because that ultimately was going to be the day, and the president issued an ultimatum to Congress, fund construction of the wall, or let's get a shutdown just before Christmas. And now this is happening because the short-term spending compromise, he will not sign it. We're kind of in a chaotic, tailspin is the words that I'm thinking of. And what does it mean? How does this all filter out? It means that at the White House, from somebody that I talk to who covers the White House daily, pretty much they're in bunker mode, and they have been that way in the last couple of weeks as all of this is bubbling up. And you've seen a lot of shuffling of Republican lawmakers, a couple of Democrats and other advisors who've come in and out of the White House or had to be these conversations and hand-wringing and who knows what. But the relationship between the president and General Mattis was definitely rocky, at least for the past couple of months. And so that was a frayed relationship. Was it going to end that way? Sure. But that quickly, I guess, is the thing. And now you have Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who is always careful. To me, he's like a cat. He tries to land on his feet. And he's avoiding doing anything, I think, that puts him in a bad position with the president. But yet he's the majority leader, so he's standing in the middle of this and has to stake his claim, has to make a stand on the whole wall funding thing. And, every time McConnell's talking about it, he keeps talking about bipartisan cooperation and, victories and, all that kind of stuff. So this may be a fight for another day, but how long can you use this playbook and push this fight off, in other words? And the funding for the wall, the battle for the funding of the wall, does it get pushed? If it gets pushed into a new year, it's a much different House in that case. I mean, both Paul Ryan and House Majority Leader Kevin McCarthy told the press last week they couldn't pass a spending bill with $5 billion for wall construction. They couldn't do it. And Mitch McConnell was told by the White House that the president would sign the short-term bill without it. But now, times have changed. it's going to be interesting in this next week how this all unfolds. And you had plenty to say about it. When we come back, we're going to dive into that virtual mailbag. Hang with us, everybody.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a four-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
Would you like to get back that full head of hair from years past? Now, there is Reveal. Beverly Hills celebrity dermatologist Dr. Nathan Newman took nearly a decade to develop Reveal from natural botanicals to return to a full body head of hair. Reveal for men and women with a 30-day money-back guarantee at GCNLife.com or toll-free 844-443-6637. 844-443-6637. Reveal at GCNLife.com.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Here is what one satisfied customer had to say about Heart and Body Extract regarding his angina pain.
I haven't had an angina pain since I've been on it. The Heart Body Extract is just so great. I thank God that I was led to this product that's doing so much for me and that can do so much for other people.
Call to order your 2 month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. Kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
I must have dreamed a thousand dreams, been haunted by a million screams. I can hear the marching feet, they're moving into the street. Now did you read the news?
The mail is here, and let's dive right into it without further ado. How about this one from William, who says, "Hello, Ms. Delaney. Wow, it seems as though our government is in a constant state of fluctuation, but does that necessarily mean that it is a bad thing? I will give the Trumpster one definite high five. He does stick to his guns, so to speak, and he's probably very hard to sway." Oh, I'd agree with that. I think he probably is hard to sway. That, because he's used, no matter what, take anything you think aside, no matter what, pro, con, don't like this, don't like that. Let's just look at the style. And you know what the style is? The style is he gets what he wants because as a business person, that's exactly what he was able to do. And if he didn't, he moved on. Or there were lawsuits or there were things you have that happen in business. But business is different from politics. And I think that's rattling the cages of a lot of politicians. One thing that's not great, and Debbie sent me a note about this. Kate, I know you like to talk a lot about business, and I've heard you talk about the fact that you had to school yourself in the markets. What do you think about the Dow dropping 464 points and the index closing below 23,000 for the first time since 2017? Well, it's never good to see that. You know, it's really strange because you can pull up and get gasoline, unless you're living in California, because they're always gonna rip you off. But oil prices are free falling. You look at a barrel, 46 a barrel for the first time since the summer of 2017. So you pull up and you fill up for nothing. But then the stock market is tanking, right? And what does the stock market tank on? the economy, how investors are worried about the economic expansion. What about the Federal Reserve? Did they make a mistake? They're raising interest rates. They continue to do that. What's happening with the political fights and what's going on there? All of that feeds into that, the belly of that beast, and any of the international tension. And that's what you're going to see. Could it be overreaction? Sure. But it doesn't matter. However the market reacts, it reacts. Who the investors are, if they sell off or what they do, affects the markets. You know, period. End of story. I say it, and I'll say it again. It is like being at the craps table. And you know that when you invest in the market, that no matter what, whatever is happening, politically speaking, economically speaking, hey, remember after 9/11, the worst, first of all, I care about the human side of that, and I care that for me personally, there was heavy damage there. I had just gotten a job in New York, and there was nothing more heartbreaking and awful than to be on the air when those planes flew into the towers. I mean, the worst, getting on a subway and going into the city and seeing those sad pictures of people up, have you seen so-and-so? And you knew, oh no, they're all gone. Are you kidding me? They're gone. And then going into the parking lots and realizing the cars that weren't claimed were cars of the people who had died. And how did that affect us, our markets? It crashed so many businesses. It tanked markets. And then it was like that kind of, not kind of, it was that rebuild mode. All right, here's one completely different. This one is from Patrick. Ms. Delaney, I wanted to tell your listeners, if they are headed overseas, boy, I saw one of the ugliest things ever in the UK, and that would be the fact that you had so many flights diverted. There was this bizarre drone incident that basically catapulted the airport, Gatwick, into panic, full-on panic. Did you hear about the 32-hour shutdown? It affected my family as we were waiting for a daughter to come home. Yes. So they were searching for these, for this drone, for the person who was operating the drone, or operators, or whatever, and it led to the closure of the airport, and that meant people were sitting on suitcases, laying on the floor, trying to kill the time, you know, whatever. They couldn't take it down either. The police were trying to shoot the drone down. They thought about that, but then they thought, well, better of it because of stray bullets. So then they tried to figure out other ways they could take the drone out. And, you know, it just threw it into a chaotic state because you didn't have an overnight, you know, a lot of overnight flights or that kind of thing there. So you had people that were, that's a major hub. You had people flying in and out, flying to get back to the U.S., flying to get to other places in other parts of the world, and you just had people on the floor. What were they going to do? And the disruption, they say, was deliberate. They really believe that this was carried out to do that, to as a reckless kind of thing. And drones have huge ranges, and powerful ones can do some serious destruction. So limited battery power, is that what the situation was over Gatwick? And when the people behind the disruption are caught, you know, they could get like 5 years in prison. Why? Because they're endangering safety. They basically shut it down. And then they had to re-rack people. And this is the holiday time, so there was more people than ever going through there. And this is, you know, when you look at aviation, this is a challenge. The whole drone thing is a challenge to begin with. Remember the thing with the laser pointers? And that's affected a few airports, but not to the point that we saw at Gatwick. So, yes, I did see it. I realized that there were many Americans that were trying to get back home, and now they're just delayed another day. Plus, it's scary when you don't know what's going on. And that's why I say when you travel, you just have to know the possibilities, right? Pack your comfortable shoes, your best books and music. And I'm laughing, but I'm not, because I've traveled a lot this year. Oh, how many planes was I on? And yes, there were delays, and yes, there were problems and things happened, but I didn't have anything like that happen where it was shut down that long. I had a couple hours on tarmac that was a mind bender for all the people that were on the plane, but because I just really put myself in that mindset of this is, you know, this is how we live. This is what happens. It's a whole, you know, different ballgame. All right, let's move on to another one. This one is from Matthew, listening to us in Austin, Texas. And he says, Kate, I read General Mattis's resignation letter, and I think he was diplomatic in one sense, and then he got his jab into the prez. And it's not surprising that he was not going to stay in the Trump administration because obviously they didn't agree on what was going to happen in Syria, and a new defense secretary would be put in place eventually anyhow. I thought it was interesting at the end how he said it, he, you know, would help with a smooth transition and whatnot, because you think of all the people who are in the service and how important it is. And, of course, we have round-the-clock missions, and he mentioned that, too, as well. So I say hats off. I mean, this is obviously a president who has strong beliefs and sticks to his beliefs. And if you are not on board with that belief, the chances are you're not going to last in the administration. Yeah, that pretty much sums it up. You're not going to last in the administration. And he said, you know, one of the things he said in his resignation letter is his views aren't aligned with Trump's. He said he had a privilege to serve as the 26th Secretary of Defense. But, you know, in the deep into the resignation letter, he said that they weren't aligned. And not being aligned in that position, of course, it was inevitable, of course, right? It was inevitable. We knew that. All right, I think we can squeeze in one more. Let's get one more in. All right, how about this one? This one is from Terry. And Terry says, Kate Delaney, I was thinking about you and your family and that dog, Mahalo. Are you going anywhere for the holidays, or are you staying close to the nest? I like that. I'm conjuring up the nest in my mind. I am staying close to the nest. Yes, I am not going anywhere. Usually, in one way, it's sad. Usually I go and see my family, my nephew and brother and sister-in-law in Tampa. We usually do that, but we decided, because of all the traveling I did and things that were happening at the tail end of the year, not to do that, because I would see them in January instead, and we would see them again before that. I mean, we'd see them after that. So the answer to your question is, yes, I'm staying at the nest. That means I can just relax. You know what I like? I like a fire when I'm off the air, a fire and a nice glass of Malbec. That sounds so good to me. Watching the fire, hanging out with the Mahalo and the other. Yeah. Music means we're stepping aside. Hang with us. Going to introduce you to some pretty interesting people on the flip side.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. Senator Elizabeth Warren has taken the first major step toward running for president. The Massachusetts Democrat is forming an exploratory committee for the 2020 campaign.
It's going to be about the tens of millions of families across this country who work hard, who play by the rules, and who just time after time take one body blow after another.
Warren's a frequent target of President Trump. He's still insisting on money for his border wall, but he also says he's ready to negotiate an end to the partial federal government shutdown. House Democrats plan a vote on Thursday on bills to reopen the government. Republicans say that the bill doesn't provide enough for the border wall, and they're not going to pass anything that the president won't sign. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
What does Meals on Wheels do? They deliver meals and smiles to homebound seniors. But Meals on Wheels does something else. They turn a volunteer's lunch break into a meaningful experience.
As small and as simple as the relationship is between a volunteer and a client of Meals on Wheels, it's really so impactful. I never thought that 5 minutes could make so much difference in the lives of two people, but it has.
Drop off a warm meal and get more than you expect. Volunteer at AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. That's AmericaLet'sDoLunch.org. Brought to you by Meals on Wheels America and the Ad Council.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-919-5435. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-919-5435. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-919-5435. 1-800-919-5435.
Green Room right now, we have Sean Mullinex, and he is talking about his father's book, and this book I think is going to resonate with so many of you. I can't tell you how many stories I heard about this family when I moved to Dallas, Texas, and the impact they had on the wrestling world, particularly in the area, but I think just in general. So if you think of Fritz von Erich, I know some of you right now are thinking of that name. Master of the Iron Claw, that's the name of the title of Sean's father's book, and it talks about these stories that so many people don't know, and I love that when we can hear these stories that were untold or the whole story wasn't out there. So, Sean, first of all, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kay.
So when we look at the story of Fritz, and you told me this off the air, how close was your father to Fritz?
Well, you know, he has an interesting backstory to this. He grew up in a small town in Texas and was a huge wrestling fan. He would always watch wrestling on Saturday nights. And, you know, back then there was only three channels, so it's not like he had a lot of options. And his favorite hero was Jack Atkinson, who was at that time had a name for himself as the German bad guy, Fritz von Erich. And, you know, later in life, he grew up and went to the Marine Corps and stuff like that. And as fate would have it, he ran into Kevin von Erich and was introduced to the family and just was enamored by actually having a relationship with Fritz himself. He ended up volunteering to help Fritz learn the computer because he wanted to track his stocks in real time. So he started volunteering his time with Fritz, and it was one of Fritz's dreams to finally have his story told. You know, Fritz was a pretty private person. He didn't allow a lot of media to get out on himself. And so, you know, Fritz wanted the story to be told in his own words, so to speak. And he asked my dad to, you know, write that book for him and, you know, to try to get the story out in Fritz's own words. He was able to take care of Fritz right up till he died of brain cancer in 97. And, you know, they had a very beautiful relationship.
You know, Sean, I love how you talk about that, that he took care of him, he got to know him, and Fritz was a private guy. I heard the same things. And for so many of you listening to this, and, you know, we talk about wrestling and now what the world knows about the personalities, et cetera, but Fritz Von Erich and his five sons really had a definite impact on the wrestling world with their world-class championship wrestling. There's no doubt about that. Tell us a little bit about how they spread the word of wrestling and how they made it that much bigger, not just in Texas, but in other places in the country and in the world.
Well, you know, they definitely was worldwide known. When Fritz went to Japan and beat the giant Baba with the banded iron claw move, you know, that just really blew his career up. And then here locally to Texas, he had the Sportatorium there in Dallas. And, you know, he would have a lot of people come in and wrestle. And it was a big deal. It was on TV. And you know, everybody could just watch it. And the fans just loved it. Everyone, you know, loved wrestling at that time.
You know, he talks about this in the book, but what was it like in the old days for a wrestler? I think very different from today.
It definitely was. You know, I know the stories in the book about they would like to have a good match. So they would get out there, maybe the first round and kind of just toy with each other. And then, you know, basically once one got mad at each other, all of a sudden the fight was on, you know, and that's how wrestling was as Fritz described it back in those days. And, you know, it was a lot about entertaining the fan as well as demonstrating superior strength and, you know, ability over the opponents.
Yeah, and for you, I'm wondering, did you grow up with that same feeling, especially knowing the love your dad had for it?
Absolutely. You know, I always heard stories that he would tell me, and I was just enamored by it. And, you know, that was actually an interesting point on how the book came to be. You know, after Fritz passed away, I was finished with high school, and, you know, my dad was a big influence on my life at that time, and he made me a promise that if I would go to college, he would start this story and put it into print. And, you know, so I got to watch that unfold. That's why when, you know, before he passed away, he kind of asked me to help fulfill his lifelong work and his legacy that he left me. And, you know, since then, I've just been trying to push it forward.
Yeah, and so we're so glad that you're here with us doing that, Sean. And we're speaking with Sean Mullinex, and the book that his father wrote is called Fritz Von Erich, Master of the Iron Claw. So let's say somebody's listening, maybe two people, and they don't know about the Iron Claw. Tell us about the nickname, the Iron Claw.
Well, that was Fritz's patented move. And that was an interesting story how he created that. After one of his matches, he got kind of injured and couldn't really keep up his workout regimen. And he would created this particular exercise where he would stack books on his hand, like lay his hand on a table and stack books on it and lift them with his fingers. And that is what, you know, created him having such an awesome grip, you know, that was just phenomenal.
I know. I love that nickname. It's so good. Master of the Iron Claw. What was the family like? What do people not know about the Von Erichs?
Well, you know, they were definitely very private people. You know, they've been compared to the Kennedys because, you know, they had such fame and at the same time had such tragedy with loss of their sons. So, you know, the story is just really compelling on how they, you know, adapted and grew. I think the book, does a good job of showing the world that they were just human too. And, you know, these losses really hurt them internally as well.
Oh yeah, of course, just like anybody, and that family definitely had a lot of family tragedies, and that's why comparing them to the Kennedys in so many ways, I can see how your dad would have come to that realization. Was your dad had to be, how did your dad feel about pulling this work together? He had to feel excited, proud, happy, because he had such a love for Fritz.
Absolutely. You know, that love more or less became an obsession. The first book he published was called The Secret of the Iron Claw. And it was his first work to ever be published. And it was a great book. The story was good, but he just wasn't happy with it. And he spent he just almost obsessed over it, of trying to make the story better and, you know, bridge together, edit it out and make sure it makes better sense and stuff like that. So, you know, I found it really admirable, his obsession to getting this book out there in a way Fritz would really be happy.
You know, you talk, Sean, about Fritz's patented move, but he was known for some other things, too. He was definitely a showman, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, he had quite an interesting career. Most people don't know that he played professional football even. So he definitely understood how to entertain people. You know, when he would, I remember my dad telling the story of the first time he saw Fritz. You know, he played that German bad guy and came out in, you know, uniform and goose stepping and stuff like that. So he definitely knew how to play with the audience and really gain their attention.
Yeah, and talk about that. What did Fritz do before he became Master of the Iron Claw?
You know, the one story I heard is that he was a bit of a bouncer or, you know, someone that would go collect money if you owed a debt to somebody. I thought that was a really funny story. But, yeah, he...
That is a funny story. Oh, he's a bouncer. I could see that. So when people listening pick up the book, Fritz von Erich, Master of the Iron Claw, Sean Mullinex is with us. His father, Ron, wrote the book. What do you think your father would want people to take away from the story?
You know, I believe that he would want everyone to know that this is the way Fritz wanted the story told. And it was, I believe it done a good job of telling the story through Fritz's words. And I've heard several people tell me how they can just almost hear Fritz's booming voice coming through the pages as they read them. So I definitely think that what we have now is very impressive. The picture on the front cover is actually a talking point. We picked that one. It was an old black and white that we had. We had to have it fully remastered. It is with Fritz and Gene Kaninsky, and Fritz is putting this iron claw on Gene Kaninsky's head. And to my knowledge, it's supposed to be one of the first pictures ever published in the newspapers and, you know, published in the media. So that's, you know, one of the reasons why we changed the cover and stuff like that. And I think my dad and Fritz would both be really happy with this.
Yeah, well, I love it. So Fritz von Erich, Master of the Iron Claw, Sean Mullinex is joining us, and his father, Ron, has written it. What does it mean for you to be able to talk about this and your dad?
You know, I really just find it a great honor to know the story and, you know, just to have a part of it. That's why after he passed, I just, you know, it was hard to work on for a little bit, but I just couldn't let it go. I just always remembered that obsession. And, you know, I just want to bring honor to Fritz and his family and, you know, just make the world aware of what a great and awesome person he was. And, you know, he was really a maven of his industry at that time and really changed the world of wrestling to what we see it today.
I love it. Pick up the book and get it on Amazon. Terrific stuff. Thank you so much, Sean, for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to produce an endless supply of nano-sized silver solutions right from the convenience of your home. Silver Lung. With the addition of our unique lung delivery system, respiratory infections are targeted directly, where traditional oral administration simply cannot reach. This pioneering method also preserves the original particle sizes and delivers your silver solution directly into the bloodstream. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
Heart disease kills over 600,000 Americans every year. For heart health, Ben Fuchs recommends CardioFX.
CardioFX is a source of the B-complex vitamins. There's 120 milligrams of vitamin C per dose. So you're going to get your vitamin C, you're going to get your B-complex and the CardioFX. The CardioFX is also a source of sulfur in the form of N-acetylcysteine. Sulfur deficiency can lead to elevated homocysteine, and it is thought to be one of the major reasons why vegetarians are at higher risk in some countries, and based on some studies, for heart disease than folks who eat animal protein. It has something to do with the lower sulfur content of vegetarian diets, and you will get sulfur in the form of N-acetylcysteine in the CardioFX product. N-acetylcysteine can be converted into taurine. So all in all, it's a pretty well-rounded cardiovascular nutritional supplement.
Concerned about heart health? Order CardioFX by calling 866-735-2470. That's 866-735-2470 or on the web at brightsideben.com.
The United States of Empire is a book that claims the United States is the empire of the world. George Washington had warned us against foreign wars. The United States of Empire shows that World Wars I and II left England broken. Its former colony, the U.S., had to save the empire. Was there ever a vote? Who do we fight for? The Deep State began with World War I. The United States of Empire by James Dunn. Available at Amazon Books.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women. Here's Dr. Sonia Baccia on The Doctors.
So this is a product we're going to see if it works. It's called Instantly Ageless. And the idea is that it works very quickly. Is you just need a very small amount. And then you apply it to areas where you might be a little bit puffy. I have just looked at what's in this product. And one of them is something called argireline, which is sort of a darling in dermatology right now. It's a peptide or a protein that actually relaxes the muscle. It's also called Botox in a bottle. The other active ingredient in this is silicates, which are almost act like a clay. They're minerals, and they're making the skin sort of tighter. It's actually increasing the surface tension on the skin to push that herniated fat pad back.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com.
But you're going to love the book. Jim Best has written a book called The Irate Pirate. I think of pirates in my childhood, and just the whole combination of that immediately, I think, evokes something. So the title is brilliant. And then the theme behind the book is also fabulous, because I had a chance to catch up with Jim and do a little sneak preview off the air. So I'm very excited to introduce all of you to Jim Best. Jim, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, my pleasure, Kate. I've been looking forward to it, and I am always eager to talk about The Irate Pirate.
Let's talk about that title. The title is, it's very clever and catching. Tell us about your idea behind it.
Sure. Well, thank you. So many of the audience and readers have identified with this. There's a whole universe of people that play Words with Friends, and I was playing that game. It came to a very late stage in the game, and the only word that I could spell was irate. I couldn't go out with that word, and so I had to be very cautious. Anybody that plays frequently will understand my predicament. It started right next to a double word score. Your opponent puts a letter in front of your word. They not only get the double score on your word, but then they can go perpendicular to it, and it could be a game breaker. So I was spelling irate, and I wondered what letter they could add to it to form another word, and the only one that I could think of was pirate. And I was struck with the non-rhyme nature of those two words, the irate pirate, And I jokingly remarked to my wife that that was going to be the first title of my children's book. And as I began to think about it, the words caught me, and I'm a word person, and so I'd always have a fascination with words. But it struck me, well, every pirate is irate, so I don't want to write about that. That's why they say, "Arr." But then I thought about, well, what if it was a kid, a schoolboy or a schoolgirl? What might they be irate about? And one of the things that I've always focused on as a parent, and many of you will identify with this, we think about the role models and the examples that we're setting for our children. And as I thought about a boy growing up in a pirate community, what would he have to look forward to if he was going to become a pirate? And we know all the stereotypes. They have patch eyes, and they have peg legs, and they have hook hands, and they work on dirty ships. So I started thinking about that. That would certainly be something that a young boy might move away from. And really, it was 2 years ago, just from Christmas Eve, that it came to me in a very quick, creative burst. And I had to go back, of course, and tune it up a little bit, but it was just a very nice and spontaneous and what sometimes we'll refer to as a pure story that unfolded, and one that, as I shared it with other people, they enjoyed it and thought it was funny and thought that not only was it a great message for children, but also one for parents, in that you have to be a good role model. You want your children to learn as they read, and you want a story that you can share with them that they may want to come to you and ask, what are certain terms and what is the meaning of this? And so I try to infuse that in the writing that I do, Kate. That was a long-winded answer to your question, but I hope that I covered your question.
No, you nailed it. And you nailed really the next question, why people would want to read The Irate Pirate. And we'll tell everybody, Jim Best's Irate Pirate. You can pick it up wherever great books are sold, of course, Amazon, et cetera, all those places that you normally go. So you peppered in the reasons why people would want to buy it. Absolutely. I like the fact that you talk about terms and using terms. When you sat and had to come up with that, boy, I just in my mind can think of the spider web of ideas and terms and things that you would want parents to know and kids to know. Was it tough to boil it down?
It was, because I think that sometimes we can write just because we enjoy it as an author, or that we know that people are going to enjoy, it'll entertain them. But I also think that reading is foundational to a good education, and education's fundamental to a really balanced and happy life. And so as I think about my responsibility as a writer, I think, okay, how do I make it so that it's more than just fun? I think lessons have to be fun. I think that's what makes learning a great adventure. And the distinction that I make is that people love to learn, but we don't necessarily like to be taught. And so if I can put something in the book that will give children and readers an opportunity to discover something, so that reading becomes like exploration, I think that was always the curiosity that I had as a child, is to enter another world through our reading. And I like to write so that it's stories that children can share with their parents. I write them so that parents will be entertained and there is some what we'll call funny circumstances that adults will identify with. But I also make it so that children can ask their parents, what does this mean exactly? Why does the parrot repeat what the characters in the book say? Things like that. And I think reading, and specifically reading together, parent and child, or teachers and students, is a particularly powerful way to share learning, because you don't have to hit a pause button, or you don't have to be shushed when you interrupt somebody by saying something in the middle of a movie, right? Reading is much more interactive, and as people can share that together, I think that's a very powerful way to learn and grow. And I also think that you can go back and revisit it. One of the things that we always say is you can read the same book, but you're not the same person, and you won't be the same student or the same child next time, and you can get something else out of it. And so I try to make them so that they're very entertaining, but I also try to make it so that there's lessons that after you think about it for a little bit, you go back and you see some nuances and some subtleties that you didn't maybe see before. So that's what I try to do as a writer. That's what I really tried to hone in on with The Irate Pirate.
What did you learn about yourself in putting this project together? As you said, you had it in your mind 2 years ago, and then you felt that creative process and it poured out. So I think it'd be interesting for people listening. What was the process like for you? How did you feel about it?
That's a great question, Kate. And I've always enjoyed writing, but I particularly enjoy writing in a way that will make others laugh or smile or be entertained or be delighted and particularly learn. And some of the things that I learned as I was a parent, as I was a manager, as I was a coach for sports teams, et cetera, is that we, first of all, need role models, but secondly, just saying what you think or writing what you know doesn't impart the knowledge or doesn't encourage people to accept that message. And so we've got to be very creative and very innovative and, frankly, very effective if we want people to relate to what we're writing. And I think that's the purpose of all creative endeavors. Then we've got to find ways that are beyond just the way that we learn or just the way that we choose to understand things. And how do we make it so that we write it once, it lasts forever, and it stands the test of time? And so that was the exercise that I put myself through. It was challenging. And so I learned that in order to be a more effective writer, I had to be more disciplined. And it wasn't just writing whatever pleased me. It was, how is this going to be interpreted? So I've got one friend who actually has a daughter who just recently turned 8, and she loves to read. And so sometimes he would have her read the books first time through, and he would videotape her doing it. And so I could see what words she didn't understand, what words would be good for her to learn at that time, and what part caught her attention and what amused her and what amazed her and what maybe bogged down the writing a little bit. So one of the things I learned about myself is that I have a pretty strong commitment not only to writing, but to education and doing whatever small part I can to make it so that students are more positive about reading and more positive about learning and that they feel supported by their teachers and parents. And that's one thing that I always do without imparting a heavy message is that I always try to make it so that the teachers in the stories, the principal is a big part, Mr. Plankwell, I still smile when I think of, but I try to make it so that they are not perfect people, but certainly worth respect and act in such a way that they are responsible members of the student's world that they find themselves responsible for.
Oh, I love it. Perfect place to end this. We don't want to give away everything because we want you to pick up Jim's book, Jim Best, The Irate Pirate, to get it at Amazon and wherever great books are sold. Jim, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, Kate. My pleasure.
If you know Kate Delaney, then you know that her lovable golden retriever, Mahalo, makes her world go around. So when Kate started looking for a high-quality dog food for him, she settled on Life's Abundance, the all-stage grain-free food. It's rated 5 stars by Dog Food Advisor, and that's a win. In fact, Kate loved the food so much that she's now repping the food at kateskibble.com. It's full of high-quality protein and nutrients, omega-3s and more. kateskibble.com is just what Mahalo needs to be happy and healthy. Grab a bag at kateskibble.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.